It's the story of an American held in a dark Venezuelan prison.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
I'm Becky Bruce. I spent a year working on Hope in Darkness, which now has more than 2 million downloads. Find it on KSLpodcast.com or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Veterans are who we are, what we talk about, who we fight for. This podcast sheds light on real issues facing our veterans. It informs the uninformed, it celebrates their triumphs, and provides hope to those fighting a silent battle. This is Upholding Valor. And welcome. I'm Jill Atwood, Director of Communications for the VA Rocky Mountain Region and your host for Upholding Valor. I want to dig a little deeper into what's happening on American streets, in American cities, large and small, the protests surrounding inequality and race, the conversations that are happening around dinner tables, the conversations that should be happening but are not, and the polarizing climate simmering beneath it all. I've been thinking about this a lot, and my thought is, you know, how do I talk to my kids about this and some of the violence that we have witnessed? How do I feel about this personally, given my background and upbringing? It's tough. It seriously makes me heartsick. What do I really know as a white female, really a white privileged female? I have never truly walked in the shoes of someone who is viewed as different or less than because of skin color or sexual orientation. And I want to make it very clear that VA serves all veterans no matter their race, religion, gender, age, or sexual orientation. We serve all who have served and embrace that diverse background and experience. Now, I'm joined by a veteran today who had to keep quiet for a very long time about who she really was. And I'm also joined by a true veteran advocate who ensures veterans feel comfortable and included while receiving VA services. So we're going to get into it a little bit today. Please welcome Cynthia Hudgens. She is an Army veteran. And Michelle Wilcox. She is the LGBT Veteran Care Coordinator for VA and the local facility here at VA Salt Lake City. Thank you both for being here so much. I really appreciate it. I know I was talking a lot, but there's a lot to talk about, right? A lot of questions, a lot of conversation surrounding Black Lives Matter and how this societal movement impacts our veterans. And Cynthia, as an Army veteran, I want to start with you. And I just want to get your thoughts on what you've witnessed over the last month. Is this movement for real this time? Is this truly a time of change? I mean, what does this bring up for you as a gay woman who served in the military for a long time and felt the need to stay quiet about who you really are for so long?
It just feels like the civil rights movement back when I was a kid. I was like 12 years old when all of that was going on. Enough has not changed. It feels like the black community, and I'm not friends with anyone that's black, so I cannot really speak for the community, but all that pent-up rage for the systemic poverty and the systemic, because of the systemic poverty, not being able to get the education and to get out of the ghettos, to not be considered on equal par with someone with the same education, to be able to walk into a store and buy any product and not be asked if they, you know, put it in their handbag kind of thing.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
To be stopped on the street. One of our community happens to be a gay black man, and he's stopped regularly when he's driving. He was stopped 4 times one night.
I can't imagine. What's so, that like? What does he say about that? And that's just normal
it's
for him.
It's frustrating. But it's, you know, you put your hands on the steering wheel because any movement, and I don't know what that's like. I mean, when I get pulled over by police, you know, if they see me reaching into my glove compartment, they assume that I'm getting out my registration.
Sure.
Not a weapon. So I don't have to be careful. But it made me think about if I was black, I couldn't move at all. And I'd have to say very clearly and move very slowly, I'm getting out my registration now.
I'm going to bring Michelle into this conversation and Cynthia continue to chime in. But we were talking before we started, and I see this as more than I think Black Lives Matter is the title we're putting on this. But I think it's about everyone who's ever felt lesser or slighted or discriminated against based on sexual orientation, race, religion, age, gender, whatever it is. What are your thoughts on that?
I would agree. I find it really invigorating that right now we're saying it's really enough. It's time to stop treating people as less than. It's a minority is a minority, whether that's a woman, whether that's you're treated differently for your sexual orientation, gender gender identity. It's the same. And it looks different for each one, but it's hopeful. It's hopeful that maybe we can make some change.
Hopeful without the violence. I can't speak to the violence and the people who seem to be taking advantage of the situation, but I find it 99% hopeful as well. What are your thoughts, Cynthia?
Well,
I think it's about you as well.
Well, the violence escalates things. I mean, I remember the Kent State massacre and bringing in the military, and a lot of the folks who have served in the military don't think that's a good idea. We're not a police force. To bring in the military, even the National Guard, we're not trained as policemen. We're not trained in riot control. And the threat of arming our military against our own civilians, that's not good. And as I understand, I'm not a scholar by any means, but as I understand the fundamentals of the Constitution, there were certain restraints put on the military so that would never happen. The military can't just walk into your home and seize your home and make it a headquarters for their operations like we did in war zones and throughout Europe. You know, they'd take over a palace and make that the headquarters. So,
talk to me about your time in the military. Speaking of the military, you're an Army veteran. What did you do in the Army, and how? And you mentioned that you stayed quiet for a really long time about who you really are.
Well, I was in denial about who I was. I had belonged to two different fundamentalist religions, converted from one to the other when I went into the Army. And both of those religions basically taught that it was a sin against God Almighty, and that the Almighty hated me and would send me straight to hell. So I was in denial for decades.
Internally.
And a decision I had made early on, too, was my career instead of marrying and having kids. Because I'm of the generation that marrying and having kids was not an option, really. It's either one or the other. So
what did you do in the Army?
Well, I wanted to fly for the Air Force. I was in Air Force ROTC, and I found out that they were not accepting women, and the Army opened its doors to women in 73 or 74, mm-hmm. I think. And I enlisted in 75 and eventually got into flight school. I flew the Vietnam era Huey for 20 years and then the Black Hawk for 16.
Where did you train in Fort Rucker?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where I trained as well for ATC school.
Yeah.
Hot and humid. We can talk about that later.
Traffic controllers, yes. Tell pilots where to go. Yes.
Exactly. So tell me more. It was the don't ask, don't tell time.
That happened at a bad time in my life. I mean, I was closeted and not involved with anyone until Clinton got into office, and I got involved with someone for the first time in my life, and I'm going, oh crap. And the don't ask, don't tell. I mean, as a woman, there's very few of us pilots, women pilots. Mm-hmm. And the guys that I was with at the time didn't know that they had PTSD from Vietnam, didn't know what to do with it. And I was verbally harassed a lot at my first duty station. I was overseas in Panama at the time. And I didn't have the wherewithal to deal with it. I couldn't comprehend what they were going through, that they would take it out on me.
Sure.
So I was never actually sexually assaulted, but there was enough hatred there.
Just verbal?
Yeah.
What types of things would they say to you?
I can't remember.
Okay.
To be honest. But it was laced with real hatred. Mm-hmm. So I felt threatened with sexual assault 24/7, but I was never actually assaulted. And then when Clinton came out with Don't Ask, Don't Tell, I'm going, oh, shit, now they have a reason to sexually assault me because I'm lesbian.
Do you think they knew that?
Yeah, it was an open secret. I mean, it's like you can't really hide what you are to the best of your ability.
Then why did you?
Because I was worried about losing my career. At the time, even under Don't Ask, Don't Tell, if you say the words, I am gay, then they can prosecute you out of the military. If you never say the words, but they have probable cause, they can find some other reason that you can't contest really well. Mm-hmm. And you lose your career, you lose your benefits, you lose your retirement, all on a less than honorable discharge.
All for being who you are.
All for being who I am. And there's some veterans who have been processed out, and it says dishonorable or less than honorable due to sexual orientation. There's DD-214s that actually say that. So the veterans have had to have their dignity reinstated by having that clause taken out of their DD-214 and having the status changed to honorable. And that affects your being able to have a job, too.
Sure.
You know, so it's very punitive.
And how long were you in the military?
Nearly 4 decades.
Oh, my goodness.
I was active duty nearly 5 years, in active reserves for about 4, and in the Utah Guard for 30.
Mm-hmm. Did you go to Desert Storm or...
No, we did not deploy in the 90s.
Okay.
I didn't go to war till 2003.
You did?
During the invasion of Iraq.
Okay. Wow, I'm sure that was something.
Yeah, it was kind of irony because when I put the uniform on, I'm going, oh, I can put in 20 years and never see war. And that's true. I got my 20-year letter the year before I went to war.
You could have gotten out.
Yeah, but I wouldn't have been able to draw my retirement till age 60.
And something tells me you loved what you did.
Yeah.
So when did things change for you? And then now you're here at the VA seeking services. So I imagine you needed something.
Well, earlier when we were talking about, when I had stated the blacks and their pent-up rage, mm-hmm. I can understand that because I had 4 decades of pent-up rage.
Yeah.
That I couldn't be who I was. I couldn't date who I wanted to. Without risking everything, I was in a high-profile MOS, military occupational specialty, as a helicopter pilot. Everybody knew who I was.
And it's a high-stress.
It's a high-stress environment. And the next woman aviator was 20 years younger than me. So I had no female peer group for years. I was the 27th woman to graduate from Army Flight School in 1977.
Wow.
And I was the only woman pilot for quite a while.
That's so cool.
In most of my career.
You're right. She is awesome.
So, what was the question again? Oh, the pent-up rage. The pent-up rage. So that pent-up rage led me to the VA.
Yeah.
Because I'm going, I am over the top angry, wanting to bite people's heads off, and I don't know what to do with this. I happened to be in a gay bar. No, the Pride Center at the time. And Breeze Hannaford had these flyers made out. You know, if you've been harmed by Don't Ask, Don't Tell, it was the rainbow flag with a helmet on it. And if you've been harmed by Don't Ask, Don't Tell, we have a Friday group at 1:30.
And it was speaking directly to you.
So I just showed up. I didn't go through any in-processing or anything else. I'm going, I gotta do something about this. And then I found out about dialectic behavior therapy, which helped me with self-advocacy skills and negotiation skills, because I didn't even know how to advocate for myself for simple things.
Mm-hmm. And Michelle Cynthia isn't, she's not alone. I mean, you're helping countless veterans with similar backgrounds, you know, different genders. Talk to me a little bit about the program that she's talking about and what resources we have for those who have struggled so long in silence or have been so discriminated against throughout their military career and then even beyond after it's over.
Well, I can say Salt Lake City has been serving LGBT veterans since 2008. Breeze Hannaford had started the program before its inception. So I think it's been a place of safety for veterans to come and talk about what's happened to them. We have excellent therapists that can treat PTSD. We do a lot of training so people are culturally competent and provide care that says, hey, you know, you're welcome here. We are sure to provide, I don't know if you see signs that have pictures of people who are LGB as well, that they can see who they, this is a picture of me. That means I am welcome here. You see rainbow lanyards that says, I can maybe approach this person. So we're trying to make this a warm and welcome environment that they are included as well.
Well, and also there's the poster in the front of the building that was very meaningful to a lot of us. It says, we serve all who serve.
Yes.
And there's the stethoscope, and right by it are rainbow dog tags.
Yeah.
So we're going, oh.
Is that a shock? I could be open here. Was that really
a
shock to you?
Literally, my first coming out of the closet was in that group. Publicly.
Wow.
Because I had one friend, I had a therapist years before, and I just was that closeted. I was that afraid.
Yeah. Well, I mean, 40 years of hiding who you truly are. How are you?
Don't Ask, Don't Tell crashed the year before I retired, and the Defense of Marriage Act crashed the year I was retiring, and then gay marriage was the year after that. So right as I'm leaving, all the things that I wished had been in place the whole time come about.
Sure. And I know VA has evolved so much in this lane just in the little over decade that I've worked here. So I'm so glad that you're taking advantage. I'm so glad you stumbled upon the flyer that spoke to you. How are things now, and how are these resources changing your life? And thank you for your service, by the way.
Thank you.
You're amazing.
I'll be forthright. I mean, when I first came here, I was over the top angry and out of control. And also, I had a very entrenched victim mindset. I'm going, the Army screwed me up, and it's your job to fix me. And I didn't realize how I was to take responsibility for my own healing. And so when I took the dialectic behavior therapy class, I gave the doctor that was running that just a run for his money, because I was taking it out on him. What changed it for me is the environment here at this VA. One day, it all of a sudden dawned on me that none of the therapists were judging me, that they actually had my back. They called me on my behavior, which was completely out of line and disrespectful, but never at any time did they judge me as a person, for my orientation, for my issues, for my mental health issues. They just were adult to adult, holding boundaries, appropriate boundaries with my behavior, until I finally get it that it's my responsibility to take full responsibility for my healing. And once I did that, I didn't have the victim mindset anymore. I'm going, oh, I can work this. You know, they're evidently, what they're telling me actually works if I work it. It's kind of like the old adage in the 12-step program, it works if you work it, you know.
talk, learn, educate, listen, everything that we are doing within these walls that I wish would happen universally.
And just that, conversation. That was the life changer for me, because when I came here, I had no people skills. Zero. And learning how to respect other people by the way the therapist modeled respect mm-hmm. for me. Mm-hmm. And the number one thing was preserving dignity. That's something they never said out loud. It's just that they modeled it, and I had to get that for myself. When I realized they were preserving my dignity, then it behooved me to, when I negotiate things, to preserve the dignity of the other person. So I look back to the civil rights movement with Martin Luther King and his nonviolence, which he borrowed from Gandhi. And Gandhi was all about preserving the dignity of everyone involved, the oppressor as well as the oppressed. Because if you preserve the dignity of the oppressor in the midst of calling them on their behavior, just like the therapists do here, mm-hmm. they call me on my behavior and it's inappropriate because it's inappropriate to their dignity. I am robbing them of their dignity when I attack like I do. And that's basically what Gandhi did. He preserved dignity on both sides. And he won over many of the British people because they realized, oh, this is inappropriate to treat these people as less than human. You know, so we don't have the leadership that we did with Martin Luther King Jr. and the Kennedys, and we don't have that like we did. We assassinated our future back in the 60s.
That's so well said. Thank you for sharing. I appreciate it. Thank you for being so brave and candid about it all. Michelle, before we go, I want to talk a little bit about your program and the resources. And what are you seeing and sensing and feeling over the last 6 weeks or so? Is the topic coming up? Are people talking about it? How is your program adjusting, helping, dealing with stuff that's really, I mean, it's infiltrating all of us, regardless of who we are or our backgrounds?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we do at least 6 groups a week, and we do those currently because of the coronavirus online. But I think it strikes a chord, obviously, because, you know, when you're a minority and you're discriminated against, as Cynthia says, it's rage, it's hurt, it's painful. And we do a lot of processing about how that's impacting them mm-hmm. in their life and what that brings up for them. Mm-hmm. And I really think we just try to hold space for them to discuss what's happening. We also have some of our veterans very involved in supporting Black Lives Matter mm-hmm. because I think they resonate.
They see it as a bigger
yes,
movement.
They really resonate and want to support, you know, feeling like you can be who you are. Mm-hmm. And that's true of any minority group.
How does one get in touch with your program if they're listening? How do they find you?
They can find us on the internet. They can just type in, if you just do a Google search, you can just type in Salt Lake City VA LGBT. They can reach out to me via telephone at extension 3481.
That's just calling the main VA hospital.
Calling the main hospital. And I'm kind of a do-it-all for LGBT, connecting people to stuff they need and advocating for them and making sure that our providers are doing a good job in providing culturally appropriate care.
Thank you, Michelle. I appreciate you being here. Cynthia, thank you once again. It was an honor to meet you, and thanks again for your service. And thanks for joining us today for Upholding Valor, all of you. Stay safe, take care of each other, and be kind. This is Jill Atwood. I am a VA employee, Army veteran, and veteran of Desert Storm, and all of this is very personal to me. There is no greater mission than to serve and fight for those who fought for us. Thanks for listening, and thanks for caring. If you enjoyed our podcast, please subscribe or rate us, or better yet, tell a vet.
and tell a friend to tune in by texting VETERANS to 57500 or go to ksl360.com/veterans. VA is honored to serve you. Talk to you next time.